houses.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Today, I'm excited to introduce you to Mr. Rob Shore. He is the career coach and the chief content creator of Wholesaler Masterminds. And in my research, I found that in over 30 years of experience in corporate America, he's earned a great reputation as a leader recognized for innovation, creativity, and incredible sales success. He's the founder of ShoreSpeak, which is a consulting company that focuses on supporting organizations with strategic direction, and he coaches wholesale clients on development and growth. And today, Rob is the chief content creator of Wholesaler Masterminds, like I said, and that site is actually the online destination for wholesale professionals. He's also a frequent speaker at national sales conferences, and he spends days coaching his private and group leadership clients. He's also an author of a book called Brotherhood of the Bag. It was designed to be a manual used to turn a good wholesaler to a great wholesaler. And his books have 5 stars on Amazon so far.
Great, thank you. What a wonderful introduction. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How many of you have been 18 and in love? Yeah. 18 and in love. 1978, I'm 18 and in love. That was a long time ago, right? Yeah, it is. I'm in Miami, Florida. I just graduated from Miami Palmetto High School. And I'm on a path to go to college, except for one major problem. I was 18 and in love. And my girlfriend decided to run away from home. So she jumped into the car with her brother and his girlfriend, and they made a beeline across the country from Miami, Florida to Santa Monica, California. What do you think I did? Hopped on a plane. I packed 2 suitcases, one of which had a 15-inch black and white TV, because you got to have your black and white TV. I arrived in California, went to bed, woke up the next day, and I only knew one thing. I had no job, I had no friend, I had no place to stay, except for the brother of girlfriend, where I was not going to stay. But I knew one thing. I had $280 in my pocket. I had $280 in my pocket because that was my life savings. And what do you do when you're carrying around $280 and it's your life savings if you want to keep it safe? You put it in the bank. So I walked into a Coast Federal Savings. Most folks here don't remember Coast Federal Savings. They've been gobbled up by 3 different institutions since that time. But I sat down at the new accounts person's desk. Linda was her name. I heard a New York accent. I said, Linda, where are you from in New York? She said, I'm from Freeport. I was born in Freeport. We got to talking and gabbing. I don't know if you ever play connect the dots with somebody that's from where you used to live, right? And all of a sudden, things start to gel. You don't happen to have any job openings, I said. And she said, as a matter of fact, we do. We need to tell her. Well, you don't happen to know of any places to live for me and the girl I chased 2,500 miles out here, do you? And she said, as a matter of fact, the apartment beneath me is vacant. Really? $280, 24 hours later, I had my first friend, I had a job, and I had an apartment. What? That just doesn't happen. So I got to thinking about my engagement here with you today and the honor it is to speak to you all as you get on this amazing course that you're about to set for your career. And I was thinking about the attributes of how I was able to navigate from walking the streets of Santa Monica, Wilshire Boulevard, walking into a bank, walking out with my first job, my first apartment, my first friend, and then ascending through the positions that you can read about on LinkedIn. I won't bore you with any of them, but they all have similar threads to them. And I want to tell you about 8 of them today. Can I do that?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to tell you about 8 characteristics. Sir, your name? Yes, sir.
Christian Canada.
Thank you, Christian. Christian came up to me and said, I aspire to be in leadership. Can you, will you give me some insights into where I might get ahead in terms of meeting my leadership objective. I said, I want you to listen to what we say inside the meeting because this has everything to do with the first job you get coming out of your internship and has everything to do with your ascent as you inevitably rise through the ranks of corporate America if that's where you're headed. Eight things. I want to talk about urgency. How many people here operate with a high sense of urgency, which is awesome? Wouldn't you agree that there's a whole bunch of people in our lives that don't operate with a high sense of urgency? They find themselves taking a, I'll handle it later. I'll call the client later. I'll deal with the problem later. I had an assistant when I was president of Allstate Distributed. She used to call it moving peas around your plate. When you were a kid, did you ever move peas around your plate? You just wanted to get to the meat and the potatoes, you always move the peas around the plate. What's your sense of urgency? You know, in this day, 24-hour response time is forever. In this day, getting back to a client within the hour is the response that they've become accustomed to. Why? Because we're so digitally wired up. So as you think about sense of urgency, you think about the request that your supervisor makes of you, you think about the request that the customer makes of you, you think about the sense of urgency that allows you to catapult yourself to a place where you leave a lasting and memorable impression. You see, if you go to my website, you'll start to read about things called MQ, memorability quotient, MQ, memorability quotient. It's a trademark term of mine. And what it means is, how do you separate yourself from the vast sea of sameness? You've already taken this miraculous step to get here and separate yourself from the vast sea of sameness. Now the question is, how do you separate yourself as you get out into the workplace? And urgency is one clear and evident way that you separate yourself from the sea of sameness. What's number two? Rectitude. Rectitude. Sounds like a medical condition, doesn't it? Rectitude. Rectitude means do the right thing. Would you agree with me if I said that everybody in this room has a moral compass and has a gut understanding of what the right thing to do is? Would you agree with me when I tell you that we all know when we've done something wrong? The brain might say, oh, that was okay, but the gut's going, not so much. Rectitude, do the right thing. Here, let me give you a quick example of rectitude. When I was in my last job, before I left corporate America after 30 plus years, I had a group of employees come into my office and say, we got a little problem. We used to sell annuities, which are basically insurance savings accounts. And, you know, they calculate the rate of interest on the contracts and pay the customer accordingly. Pretty simple concept, except that all the interest rates being calculated were wrong. So we had to figure out what to do. Well, it's easy. What do? You notify all the clients that there was an error. You fix the problem. You send out new statements and make sure the communication with your clients and inside the workforce was understood. Reasonably basic, right? That's not where rectitude comes in. Rectitude comes in when 6 weeks later, the same group of employees mingle outside my door and say, you know that fix we put in for those annuities, 20,000 of them? Yeah, we calculated that all wrong. So now we have to do another, what they called, recovery. That's where rectitude comes in. Because what could you do? You could just decide to, we'll just send those statements out and the clients may or may not read them and that'll be the right way to go about it. Nope. Got to come clean with all your clients again. Got to come clean with your workforce again. Make sure everybody understands what the problem was and how we're going to fix it and not repeat it again. Rectitude, your moral compass, what it says in your gut about doing the right thing. If you follow that moral compass and what happens in your gut to do the right thing, you have a much better chance of breaking through that dreaded sea of sameness. Number three, passion. You passionate about what you do? You figuring out what you want to do so you can really harness the passion for what you do? My favorite story about passion. How many people know that I'm a public speaker, professional speaker? Maybe you saw that. Oh, geez, y'all been snooping on me. All right. I go down to Dallas. I had the really wonderful good fortune of staying at the Ritz-Carlton. Ritz-Carlton's a nice place, right? So I go up to the seventh floor. arriving on a Sunday night. I get off the elevator, I walk up to the door, and the door to my room is slightly ajar. I don't care if you've ever stayed in a hotel before, never mind a Ritz-Carlton, you walk up to a hotel room door and it's slightly ajar when you're about to walk in it, something good is not about to happen. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
I slowly push open the door, and this is what I hear. Well, hello there. I'm just turning down your room. What side of the bed do you sleep on? I said, I sleep on the left-hand side of the bed. She said, well, I was going to put your chocolates and your water. Now, how many days are you going to be with us at this hotel for? I said, I'm going to be here for 3 nights. She said, well, you're going to be back for 3 more and 3 more after that. You see, the people at this hotel are just so friendly. And now I had to know. I said, please tell me, what is your name? She said, well, my name is Anita, and I went ahead and turned down both sides of the bed just in case you decide to bring home a lady friend. What? Anita, but you have to understand, Anita had this beautiful, starched white uniform, and she was wearing this elegant chambermaid hat, and she exuded all the passion and all the enthusiasm for turning down beds in the Ritz-Carlton as people that I know that make 10 times what Anita makes. She was delighted to be welcoming me to her home, which was a Ritz-Carlton hotel. Doesn't matter the job you have. If you bring passion to it, if you bring enthusiasm to it, you separate yourself from the sea of sameness, people will recognize that and help move you up the path. Anita, I will tell that story till people stop chuckling. Do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. Rob, that sounds pretty basic, doesn't it, buddy? Oh, yeah. How many people that do you know that don't live into that? Do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. You tell a customer it's going to be on their desk by 5. What time does it arrive? By 5. You tell the customer you're going to send 5 of something. You don't send 3. But here's the thing about doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. You get to control both pieces of the promise. The what you say you're going to do and the when you say you're going to do it. See, what I do in my business is I'm always thinking about the commitments that I'm making. I want to make sure I leave myself enough time. Tell my customer what the commitment is. You'd like a proposal for me to come to Boston to speak to your group. I'd be delighted to get that to you. I can have it on your desk. Today is Friday. I can have it by close of business Monday. Will that be okay for you? And the person says, awesome. I want it on their desk by the end of today, if not first thing Monday morning. Why? I impress them. Sense of urgency. MQ, memorability quotient. I'm not the guy that's going to give it to them on Tuesday when I told them I'd give it on Monday. Do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. See, one of the things about building your MQ, your memorability quotient, is that the bar today in 2014, headed to 2015, is set so gosh darn low. Because there's so many people that don't live into these things that we're talking about. So this doesn't mean you have to have a PhD. This doesn't mean you need to be a world traveler. This doesn't mean you need to be a CEO. You need to just do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. And all of a sudden, you get to rise above a whole bunch of people you left down there just because you kept your word. That's powerful stuff. Not a big investment you got to make either. Just do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. Humor. If you haven't noticed by now, I like to laugh. And if I'm capable of it, I like to put a smile on your face too. I had a gentleman who worked for me, Russ Kobler. Russ always said to me, Rob, I take the job very seriously, I just don't take myself very seriously. Well, think about that for a second. I take the job very seriously, I don't take myself very seriously. That means he could see some of his human shortcomings. He could see some of his own errors. He did his job exceptionally well. But he could also be self-effacing, meaning he could make a little fun of himself, have a good laugh. when you get out into the workforce and you're looking to climb the corporate ladder or whatever ladder you aspire to climb, it doesn't mean you have to be devoid of humor. Because humor helps us as an outlet, doesn't it? Helps us take some of the pressure off. Helps us lighten the mood in a room. I use humor extensively. You sit in the boardroom with the president of Allstate Corporation, and you're the comedian. It's not you're the clown. It's that you have a lighter air, a lighter side that allows you to help navigate. Does that make sense? Helps a lot. I never went to college. But I did go to the Columbia School of Broadcasting. That sounds impressive, doesn't it? You know, let me tell you how I found out about the Columbia School of Broadcasting. I called in sick. This was the teller job, right? I called in sick, and what generally appears on daytime television between the shows? All of the schools and educational outlets and everything that wants to get your money with the promise of helping you get to the better place. But one of them caught my ear, the Columbia School of Broadcasting. Don't get that confused with Columbia University in New York. It's not. Columbia School of Broadcasting was at the corner of Hollywood and Vine in Hollywood, okay? And all the work that I did, I got to go in once a week and speak with a professional DJ. All the other work that I did was via cassette tape. Does anybody here even remember what a cassette tape? Oh, thank goodness. I'll tell you a quick story. I'm going to get off the path for just one second. I'm talking to a coaching client. I'm trying to make a point to him. And I said, you know, that's about as dated as an IBM Selectric typewriter. And all I heard on the other end of the line was crickets. Does anybody know it here with an IBM Selectric typewriter? Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you for just knowing what that is. All my work was done by cassette tape. Let me tell you what the Columbia School of Broadcasting gave me. And I never got a job as a DJ. I worked one night at the Rainbow Room on Sunset Boulevard, okay? That was it. Still there. And I took 2 years of commercial voiceover lessons. Let me tell you what it gave me. It gave me the ability to harness the spoken word through vocabulary, and how I use my voice to control a discussion. Huge. You can make an impression upon someone. You can give someone the impression that you have far more education than I certainly have, that you have far more credentials than maybe you'll ever get or ever need, just by how you choose to say the words and which words you choose to say. Want to do it in the digital world? Put a vocabulary app on your computer, on your phone, I should say. Put a vocabulary app on your phone and just pick up a new word occasionally. Challenge yourself to be precise with your language. It gets noticed. It gets separating you from the sea of sameness. I want to talk about challenging the status quo. I want to be careful about this one, because as you work your way in and through the places you're going to go and the people you're going to meet, there's opportunities along the way to challenge the status quo. Does that mean that you need to be disrespectful? No. Does that mean that you need to cause a scene? No. Does it mean that there's value in the workplace for people that just push back a little bit, respectfully, honorably, with integrity, that know, back to my last point, how to articulate what they want to push back on? Is there room in the workplace for that? Oh, there's a desperate need in the workplace for that. Then you got to figure out how you're going to push. When you're sitting at the boardroom table with the president of Allstate, and you're trying to tell him, because nobody else wants to tell him, that this product, this ad campaign, this operations issue is really a bunch of crap, and everybody else sitting at the table is just going, you know, yes, sir, yes, sir. You earn respect by just pointing out, pushing back, giving your opinion, doing it professionally, doing it with respect, doing it with dignity. But there's an opportunity to do that in the workplace. And the last one of the eight is never, ever underestimate the what you can do or be. And why do I bring that up? Like I said, never had a college education. Never thought for a minute that that mattered a lick about where I was going. If you choose to leave here and get a college education, fantastic, man. I admire you. If you choose not to and move off into an awesome position, does that mean you can't ascend to where you want to go? You can go as high as you want to go. Other skills you'll need, but you can ascend as high as you wish to go. I started a magazine called I Carry the Bag. 3 years ago, I started a magazine for our community called I Carry the Bag, a magazine, the official magazine of wholesaling. It lasted for 3 years. One path I could have taken would have been to do all the investigative research. What's it like to start a magazine? What are the pitfalls to starting a magazine? What's your opinion about if I should start a magazine? What's your opinion if I should start a magazine? I did none of that. I just figured out a way to affordably and as intelligently as I could figure it out, start that magazine and figure out along the way how I wanted to course correct. Because I knew that if I went out and started polluting my brain with all of the what ifs and what fors and everybody else's opinion, I might get stalled. And I had confidence in myself that starting the magazine was a doable endeavor. Just like going out of corporate America, just like starting the website, just like doing the podcast. That's the confidence I want you to have. Just to know that the path you're headed down requires the confidence, and once you have the confidence and you rope in these other seven attributes, there's awesome things in store. Amazing things in store. Now, I was told to speak 30 minutes, and I might come up 7 minutes short. Should we open up for questions? Yeah? Who's got questions for me? Sir?
My name is Valentino Lea.
Nice to meet you.
My question for you is, as a chief content creator, has there been any issues or projects that you've come across that you haven't been able to complete yourself? And what did you do to solve that issue?
Great question. I find myself really good at incubating ideas. And then I also find myself not always being able to or wishing to carry through on those ideas that I've incubated. Okay? So here's a perfect example. I decided to go out into my community and interview extraordinarily successful wholesalers. Okay? I mean, the creme de la creme. These guys are making seven figures a year. They're making a lot of money. And I wanted to interview them and find out what were their skills, what were their behaviors, how did they get so significantly ahead. So now I'm sitting on top of 23 transcriptions. I transcribed all of them. So now I have a volume of paper, right? So this is real time. This is happening to me right now. So I'm sitting on top of 23 transcriptions. I'm thinking to myself, exactly what is it that I'm going to do with all of this goodness, and how am I going to format it? And what am I going to do? Start a membership site? Will I write another book? What will I do? So this is where your question about what do you do when you hit that impasse, right? That's I'm extrapolating from what you said. What do you do when you hit that impasse? And for me, what I had to do is I had to go out and get help. So I, through my connections, I found a woman right here in the city who is a former journalist. And she's going to help me take my ideas and give me another eye on them to help me spin them in a way that might bring revenue to the company and satisfy the need of our readership to learn more about what the most successful people in the marketplace do. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
My pleasure. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Bianca. I just want to say thank you for coming.
It's my pleasure.
I just wanted to know, so you didn't go to school other than Columbia Broadcasting University. I want to know...
Columbia School of Broadcasting. Not a university.
School of Broadcasting.
Not even accredited. Go ahead.
What adversity or obstacles did you face trying to climb the corporate ladder because of that, and how did you overcome it?
What adversities did I face trying to climb the corporate ladder without a college degree, and how did I overcome it? I cannot, and this the reason this was so much fun for me is it forced me to look back on my career. I don't speak to this group of folks, right? I speak to professional folks already engaged in the workforce. I don't speak to this age of folks. I speak to folks that are, you know, in a different demographic, right? So when I knew I was coming here and got to reflect on all this stuff, and I reflected on your question, I've been so blessed in that I have never had an interviewer say to me, we're not going to hire you because you don't have a college degree, ever. And I've never hesitated to apply for a job where I didn't have a college degree, because I knew if I could just get in front of them, I could do good. That answer your question?
Yes.
Sir.
Hello, sir. My name is Jonathan McGinnis.
Nice to meet you.
By the way, I ordered your book on Amazon, so it should be coming in.
Thank you very much for that.
I saw it on Amazon, so I was like, I'm going to order it and check it
well,
out.
Well, that's very kind of you. If anybody else wants to order the book, let me know. I'll make sure Rochelle has a discount code, and we'll have to send you a Starbucks card or something. I know. Who knew? Okay.
But to my knowledge, in 2010, you released the app.
Yep.
Wholesale app, right?
Yes, the Wholesaler Masterminds app. It's the only commode and caffeine finder on the market.
Which, by the way, is in the market if you guys want to check it. I checked out the app, too.
I appreciate that.
But my question for you was, how did that idea for an app come about, and what inspired you to create an app?
Sure. What inspired me to create an app? Staying relevant. I had to stay relevant. I mean, we had done the blog. We had done the podcast. This is circa, as you pointed out correctly, 2 years ago that we came live with, you know more about my background than I do. It's a beautiful thing. The more forgetful I get, I'll consult with you. 2 years ago, we knew, of course, that, you know, you didn't have to be a genius. My goodness, everybody's carrying a device. Got to be on that device. If I want more readers, if I want more traffic, if I want more opportunity to create revenue for the company, I better get to places where my readership is. That led me to the app. And then I just had to find somebody that shared my vision for doing it as effectively and as efficiently and as cost-effectively as possible, because now I'm an entrepreneur and I run a small business, and you know, I can't call the IT department like I used to be able to and say, I got a wild idea, and there'd be 12 people assembled to listen to what it was. Now it's, you know, I got a wild idea, and the cat goes, because I work from home. Other questions? Sir.
My name is Kyle Tillish. It's
okay.
Public speaking is a big part of our experience here at Europe. What advice would you give us when presenting in public speaking?
Okay, what advice would I give you when presenting in public speaking? What a massive question, because there's so much. If you really aspire to advance your public speaking prowess, check out a local Toastmasters, right? Toastmasters, free. Minimum cost if it isn't free. Toastmasters will give you a platform to be able to get up and tell your story, and an audience of people to critique that story. And they'll also give you a structure and a path to follow so that you can tell cogent stories, good stories, inside of your presentations so that you can connect well with the audience and you can use the right eye contact and make sure that you present yourself properly on the platform. Those are tips and tricks you can pick up. I'm not certain, but I'm almost certain. I'm NSA speaker, NSA, Nancy Sam Apple, NSA speaker. Google NSA Speaker Magazine, okay? It's the magazine of the National Speakers Association, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't think I am, you can get access to the content for free. And you can start to read what the tips and tricks are that professionals are sharing with each other that help them to become better. Because when you talk about your question, which is a wonderful one and a huge one, there's so many layers to it. Is it how do you address the audience? How do you establish eye contact? What words do you choose? How do you place yourself on the platform? How do you evoke laughter or even use humor? And there's all kinds of different avenues of approach, and we could probably spend a couple hours on that at least. Hope I answered your question.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Sir.
My name is Johnny Robinson. I read that you were a career coach. How is a career coach different from a mentor?
Thank you for asking that. How is a career coach different from a mentor? The reality is, career coach is very applicable in a very small niche of what I do. Meaning, my whole universe of folks that I work with, aspire to get revenue from, create opportunity from, is about 25,000 people between the U.S. and Canada. So my prospective audience is not 25,000 people. I work specifically with them to enhance their processes and their marketing abilities for their careers. How is a career coach different from a mentor? I would say a mentor has perhaps a little bit deeper, more emotional connection with the person that they're working with. And instead of the boundaries just being this discussion about your career here when we're on a 40-minute coaching session, it's a much broader spectrum of discussion. I think that's the best cut I would have at that great question. Does that make sense?
Yes, got it.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, my name is Tiffany Stanley.
How do you do?
And I was just wondering, how do you balance being an entrepreneur and like your personal life and not getting too stressed out or overwhelmed?
Yep. How do I balance business with social life, et cetera, without getting too stressed out and overwhelmed? I have a bit of an advantage in that age has taught me some really important lessons about being able to put what happens at work in a certain area of your mind, in a certain area of your day, in a certain area of the overall bigger spectrum and picture of things, and not necessarily let it overwhelm you. Earlier in my career, I did it a lot more poorly than I do it today. I think you have to find, if I'm coaching a client and a client is just work obsessed, right? And in my area of wholesaling in financial services, that is not uncommon at all. People, our expression in our industry is, it's not just a J-O-B, it's a lifestyle. Because in my industry, ladies and gentlemen are waking up at 5:30 or 6 a.m. They're on the road by 7. Their first appointment is at 8. They're going to run appointments at 8, again at 9:30, again at 11:30. They're going to take somebody out for lunch. They'll run a 1:30, they'll run a 3:30, they'll run a 5. Then they'll take folks to dinner, maybe do a public seminar. They're speaking in front of a public audience. And then they get to crash at their hotel because they're not even home. They're on the road somewhere in a distant city. So it revs you up to this place of constant frenetic craziness. So then you got to remember how to take care of yourself, right? So for them, it's not taking care of yourself by going to the bar and having multiple pops. It's figuring out how you're going to have the opportunity to get some reading done that has nothing to do with work, how to get some exercise in that has nothing to do with work, how to treat yourself kinder and better so that you can harness the energy that you need to run that fast. I also believe in my heart that there may not be a wonderful and huge chasm, this whole work-life balance, because of the technology that we've been provided and the fact that we're here in the 21st century. It all kind of bleeds at some point, doesn't it? Other questions? Sir?
I'm Billy Patterson.
How do you do?
I have two questions. What advice would you give someone who wants to start their own business, and what is it that a CEO does?
Sure, and let me make sure that I heard the last question. A CEO?
Yes.
Got it, thank you. What advice would I give somebody that wants to start their own business? Wow, that's a big question, just like advice I would give folks that want to become speakers. I would opt for starting out in a corporate place so that you can observe and make note of and process best practices, things you'd want to change, cultural nuances, all the things that you're learning here at Europe about kind of the corporate workplace, how you can learn about those, gather from those, and then apply those back to your own business. After that, you know, it's a good discussion of, well, what industry do you pick and the finances behind it and how not to scale up too quickly and all kinds of granular things. But I'm glad that I got to leave corporate America and come into entrepreneurial America with this kind of foundation of everything that I had grasped over there that I brought over here, because I think it allowed me to be more successful more quickly over here. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What does a CEO do? What does a CEO do? Good CEOs are conductors. They're conductors of the business. They're great thinkers, they're great communicators, and they help set the course for the direction of companies and the activities that their leaders, the leaders that I've hired as the CEO, and the leaders that work for them and down the line, depending on how big the company, that they execute on. In my opinion, great CEOs are great orchestrators of the business, especially in the large est companies. And they're not as, if at all, engaged in the weeds of the business every single day. They don't lose touch with what's going on in the weeds, but they have people they hire and trust to take care of what's in the weeds. Yeah? Sir.
Hi, my name is Christian, and I'm just curious what your future goals are, like either long-term or short-term.
Sure. I hope my answer to this doesn't disappoint anyone, because I'm 54. So my future goals are to make sure that my business, I'm just giving you the honest answer, right? I want my business to generate revenue at the level that I believe needs to be sustainable for the type of life that I wish to live today. If you'd asked me that question 10 years ago, very different answer. Right? Very different answer. I want more stock options. I want to climb the corporate ladder. I want more title. I want more responsibility. I want a whole different set of things. You ask me what I want today. I want to know that the 35 years I spent in corporate America, now moving to entrepreneurial America, I have the ability to live a different lifestyle that I choose. I mean, I live in Sonoma in the country, so it's a very different lifestyle today. Hope it's not a disappointing answer, but it's the true answer, because I'm not in the grind every day. Who haven't? Sir.
Hello, I'm Benzo. I'm not like taking that on what he said.
Yes, sir.
Future, do you see yourself being a career coach to younger like us, trying to succeed in corporate America?
So I am looking forward to my opportunity to work as a mentor for the, I guess it'll be one of you guys, right? Is that right? The boss is saying yes. So
we didn't have your mentor either.
Oh, true story, right? I'm looking forward to that opportunity when you guys move on into your internships. I will never make my practice at this particular point of folks' careers in multiple industries at this demographic. I have a super teeny tiny niche. You asked me a question, success about building your own business?
Yeah.
Pick a lane. You asked me a question about being a great speaker. Pick a lane. What does pick a lane mean? Pick a lane means if you try to be everything to everyone, your message can get diffused and you can get confused, right? I've chosen to pick a lane. My lane is 25,000 people in the U.S. and Canada, right? I mean, you guys are sitting here and the CEO of Yelp is upstairs. His audience is everywhere around the world. Could not be more completely different in terms of target audience. So to your question, I look forward to becoming a mentor with this organization, but doing it more broad-based, that's not what I aspire to do. Sir.
My name is Chris Scott. But first, I'd like to say that I actually can relate on hopping on a plane and just flying across the country.
Where did you come from?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
And my question is...
Did you chase a girl? Did you have a black and white TV? Was your first job as a teller? How much do we have in common? Please continue.
Okay, well, my question was, as a motivational speaker and also a career coach, have you ever came across anybody or any group of people that just didn't want to buy into what you were saying or your ideals? And if you have, how did you deal with it?
What a wonderful question. Have I ever... work with folks, perhaps an audience that didn't want to buy into my concepts or ideals, and how did I deal with it? Yes, I have. It was nauseating. I was crestfallen. I was disappointed. I was angry. I was frustrated. And then you pick yourself up and you dust yourself off and you go, okay, let's improve. After you listen to the folks that, you know, said your message sucked, and I really don't know why the company paid for you to be here, you dust yourself off, you figure out what the feedback meant, you go out and you tweak, and you don't get discouraged, even though you're discouraged, and you persevere and you push through. That could have been another thing on the list. My goodness, how many times have you all been kicked in the teeth? How many times have I been kicked in the teeth? I wrote a blog post a long time ago. It says you got to get kicked in the teeth. I believe strongly you got to get kicked in the teeth to be able to get where you want to go to, because you have no point of reference for how hard it can possibly be unless you get kicked in the teeth. But you got to learn from it. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Sir.
Christian Canada.
Yes, sir.
You were speaking a little bit about having a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
When is it the appropriate time to use humor in a professional setting?
Oh, what a wonderful question. I'm thinking because it's a very important question. If it's misplaced, you can be labeled as a wise ass. Right? So, and if it's misplaced, you can be labeled as disrespectful. Instead of giving you the answer about when is it most appropriate to use it, I'm gonna change the answer or the question just a little bit, maybe just then go back to it. How do you figure out when humor is okay to use? And that has a lot to do with the culture of the company that you work for, the winds that blow through the company, right? I mean, you can work for some companies that are really buttoned up and really uptight, and people do not like to laugh, and people do not like to have fun, and I do not want to work there, but you might, right? But once you understand the tempo of the organization, once you understand how the breeze blows in the organization, how light or heavy people are in the organization, I would start to put my humorous foot forward gently and cautiously and thoughtfully. But to come in with your book of jokes, wailing on day one, dicey proposition. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Sir.
So with 35 years in corporate America, and 25 years I believe in distribution.
Yes, sir.
I noticed that obviously you've built a great rapport for yourself. My question for you is, I saw that you have 500-plus professional communication as far as networking. What advice would you give for us as future interns who understand the importance of networking? Mm-hmm. What advice would you give us?
Okay, so we're talking about LinkedIn. We're talking about the folks that I'm connected to on LinkedIn. That's what I hear you referencing when you say 500-plus.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. And then the question is, what advice would I give about networking? This is similar a little bit to the fine where did my emissary go?
Me?
No.
Romar.
Yeah. Hi. So Romar and I were having a discussion about introvertedness versus extrovertedness, and I was telling him that really once I leave this podium, I am really rather an introvert in a lot of places. And I think it has to do with your networking question, which is forcing yourself to launch into places where you otherwise may not wish to be, and respectfully extending a hand and just saying, I'm Rob Shore, I'm with Wholesaler Masterminds. It's a pleasure to meet you. Tell me about yourself.
I'm Enrique Donnell, born and raised in Fairfield, California.
It was just part of the talk. So, but that's my, you got to push yourself in, right? The networking piece. You got to push yourself in as you're all doing so wonderfully well in terms of how you present yourselves, and put your best foot forward to try to figure out where connectivity might be between you and that person. The numbers on a social media site, in my opinion, mean very little, if nothing. I mean, the truth is I have 3,500 LinkedIn connections. It's meaningless. And the reason it's meaningless is if you are a wholesaler, if you're in distribution, if you manage wholesalers, do you think I want to connect with you? Of course. How many of those 3,500 do I know? Not very many. Because it's a vehicle, a business vehicle in the LinkedIn setting, right? As far as other tips on connections, There's a host of books that folks have written about the art of networking that I would defer to, but the one thing that I found some common ground with is this ability to put your hesitancy aside and launch into places to be able to introduce yourself and to be able to figure out where common ground might lie. I hope that helps. Sir?
So what methods do you personally find most effective when coaching, and how do you use them?
What methods do I find most effective when coaching, and how do I use them? I'm part coach, part consultant. What does that mean? So I am not at all a woo-woo coach. Okay, a woo-woo coach is, well, how do you feel about that today? Tell me what you're really thinking about that. Because I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I work with people to improve their practice as wholesalers, which means I will give you a kick in the butt for accountability. I will give you processes that I think that you should be able to follow. I'll help you with formats that are going to assist you with moving your practice forward. And then I'm going to give you heavy doses of, and let me suggest some of the best ways to get there, which is very consultant-like versus coaching-like. So there's a balance of the two that I use. That's what I mean by I'm not a woo-woo coach. I hope that helps. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Desiree. I just wanted to know if you can give an example of challenging the status quo respectfully.
Yes. Great question. Okay, so go to this place with me, all right? So Allstate Financial, which is a subsidiary of big Allstate. Everybody know Allstate? You're in good hands with Allstate? Those guys, right? So I'm in the boardroom. And there's, you know, the head of marketing, and there's the head of operations, and there's the head of technology, and the CEO is at the head of the table, and there's me, and the head of product. And while I'll fail you in picking out an exact occurrence, I take that back. There's a discussion that people are having about the quality of our customer service. And the IT folks are blaming the operations folks, and the operation folks are blaming the IT folks. And it was at that place that somebody had to speak up and say, regardless of the dust cloud you guys are engaging in, we're suffering in bringing revenue into the company and profitability to the company because our customers are just getting ticked off at us and leaving. And it was a conversation that maybe should have taken place outside of the same table where the CEO was, but it was exactly what needed to be said for the CEO to hear, to say, you know, that's true, and so I want you guys to figure out the 10 things we're going to do to improve upon this process to make our clients happier. And that's a place to push back when everybody wants to salute the flag. Anybody know the story of the emperor's, what is it, emperor's new clothes? Right? Nobody wanted to tell him he was naked, right? Same concept can take place in corporate America. People don't want to tell the CEO he's not wearing any clothes, metaphorically speaking, of course. And so what do? You have to figure out if you're going to be that person, can you be that person, or is it through your supervisor or your supervisor's supervisor? How do you echo the notion that maybe everything that everybody thinks is okay maybe isn't okay? But again, slippery slope. You've got to do it respectfully, cautiously, to the right folks, with the right folks, because if you do it inappropriately, what do you get branded as? A troublemaker. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Benazir. So other than bad reception as a public speaker, What are the other challenges that you face as a leader?
What are the challenges that I face as a leader? When I took my job at Allstate, I came from Oppenheimer Funds, which is a Wall Street mutual fund company. There are fundamental differences, cultural differences, between a Midwestern insurance company and a Wall Street, New York mutual fund company. There are cultural differences. The culture of the Midwestern insurance company was more gentle, more accommodating, more let's talk about it and let's work it out. The environment in a Wall Street, New York mutual fund company included lots of expletives, lots of curse words, and lots of get out of my way, I'm going to show you how to do it. Fundamentally different approaches. And when I landed inside of Allstate, I brought that approach to a conservative Midwest insurance company. that didn't serve me well. I probably would have gotten further, faster in terms of my business objectives if I had been more sensitive to what the environment was at the company I was in versus bringing the operating philosophy of the company where I was. Does that make sense? Other questions? Sir?
Jonathan, were you always comfortable with public speaking, or did it just develop over time?
I am one of the fortunate ones that have always had the ability to get up in front of a group of people and just let her rip. So I have always been comfortable. And then there's, back to this gentleman's question about how do you become a better professional speaker, there are some things that you need to do, as I referenced earlier, to become professionally good at it, classically trained, right? You can be a good musician and just kind of be riffing on the street corner, right? But if you want to be a classically trained musician, there's things you have to know. So as I continue to improve my craft, I study those things, but the ability to just get up and speak in front of an audience, I've been very, very fortunate that that's not been a problem. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Jamie. Thank you again for taking your time out to speak with us.
My pleasure.
So you have a lot of skills in coaching and management. Did you read any books that inspired or helped you develop those management or coaching skills?
Did I read any books that I would point to?
Or have mentors?
I will say I had more mentors than I did being able to cite books that impacted my life, truth be told. I have never been an avid reader. Student of the business versus avid reader. I've always been a student of my business to understand it thoroughly, top to bottom, but I've never been a sit down with a novel or fiction or nonfiction kind of person. I have had great mentors. I have had people in my life that informed me, helped educate me, and showed me the proper paths to take to navigate my career. Probably four that I can think of. And those were people that I was able to, in fact, follow. So as an example, when I moved to Allstate from Oppenheimer Funds, the reason that I was able to make that move was because the woman I reported to at Oppenheimer Funds got hired. She predated me as the president of the organization. And so she grabbed me by the proverbial coattails and said, you're coming with me, you'll be my new national sales manager. So if it wasn't for that relationship, that may not have happened or happened as fast. So very definitely mentors. It made a huge impression on how I do what I do.
Thank you.
Of course. Sir.
So I noticed you're talking about knowing when to push back and not just being a yes man.
Yes.
So going in as an intern,
yep.
Is that an even slippery or slope?
Darn right. As an intern?
Yes.
Put it in your hat. Just stuff it down, right? Because you're going to go in as an intern and you're just going to have ideas and concepts and thoughts. Gee, there has to be a better way. You know, if it was me, I'd do it this way. As an intern, it would be my guidance. Wait till somebody asks you, right? So what do you think about our organization, says the boss? You say, I'm having a great time. Are you kidding me? This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. This is great. And they say, well, you know, come on, give it to us straight. Well, and this is where you really develop your skills of how to present your idea. Well, you know, I was noticing the process that you guys are using for this feels to me like it might be better served for the customer if it was done like this. But that's just my opinion. Versus, this sucks, why do you do it this way? Which is just the wrong way to handle it.
So in our business communications class, we're working on currently something obviously you know about called elevator pitches.
Yep.
And so for us, obviously, we don't have any experience, you know, to do a successful elevator pitch.
Yep.
So what our business communications teacher had us do was kind of talk about our experience at Europe. So could you give any advice to us as far as ideas on how we can go about our elevator pitch so it sounds really attractive to the to someone like you for your ear?
I'm thinking.
Take your time.
Thank you.
Can I add to that?
Oh, you just want to jump on that pile. Go ahead.
I wanted to add that so our audience is going to be people we want to sell ourselves to.
Yes.
Europe and ourselves. So potential employers and mentors.
Yes. So what goes through my mind when I think about your elevator pitch, I think about a statement that encompasses the who you are today, the where you want to get to, and how you hope that this interaction can help us get, help me get where I want to go, and also what the benefit is to the person that you're speaking to. It's such another wonderful and big question. I think about if I was in the same shoes, what would I say? You know, my name is Rob Shore. I'm a recent graduate of Year Up. I had the opportunity at Year Up to learn a host of skills in the technology and communication area, and my goal is to secure a position with your firm where I can leverage the skills that I learned, and eventually, I hope, help your company improve and grow. Is that a pitch, an elevator pitch, similar to what?
You are hired.
I'm hired? Sweet. That's a hard one. I'm glad you have people that are teaching you with those.
Yeah,
it is hard, especially when you don't have a deep well of experience to draw from yet. But I also believe that, I'm going to go back to what was on this card, my notes. A lot of it to me is how you said it, and the enthusiasm with which you said it, and the sincerity with which you said it, and how well you articulated it, and the words you chose, and the inflection in your voice, and how you project what you believe. That's a big part of it. Especially if you don't have a deep well of, you know, you're not, well, I've got 3 MBAs and also a, you know, doctorate. No. You can maybe afford to have some blunders in how you say what you say there. One more question, sir.
Hello, Enrique Donnell.
Yeah.
From Fairfield.
That's right.
All right. You were talking about passion, your eight steps. When did you find your passion for what you're doing today?
Oh, so the whole time that I was in corporate America, I had this lingering. I had this thing that kept just every day. It just kept poking me. Go out on your own. Go do something on your own. Go be an entrepreneur. Go be a speaker. Go be a coach. And it just kept poking me. And so what I worked really hard for over the course of 30 years was to have a launch pad for myself to be able to do that. Because I didn't want to do that and starve. I didn't want to do that and not afford to be able to do the things that I'd already worked 30 years to be able to afford to do. So I wanted to make sure I had a foundation of knowledge and of dollars to be able to launch out into that world. That's what I thought was critically important. But the notion that I wanted to do that bugged me for 20 years. Well, you guys, yeah, I just, a quick thank you to you guys. You've been so great. Your questions have been awesome. I've given you unvarnished truths. There wasn't an iota BS in any of it. And I just so appreciate being able to come here and learn from you guys and hopefully leave behind a couple of breadcrumbs of information and knowledge to you. And maybe we'll see you around again, right?
Yeah,
thanks.
Thank you.
Here.